This programming is sponsored by Linscombe Wealth, a wealth management firm partnering with individuals and families dedicated to helping them build, preserve, and manage wealth by creating a customized plan to work toward achieving their goals. More at linscombewealth.com.
Welcome to this week's Party Politics. I'm Jay Iyer, a political science professor from Texas Southern University.
And I'm Brandon Rottinghouse, a political science professor from the University of Houston. Hey, thanks for hanging out with us and talking politics. We've got some interesting things on the menu this week. So, Jay, what's up first?
Well, the ongoing questions surrounding immigration and, of course, the DACA deal, right? Or will we have a DACA deal?
Yeah, question mark.
Quick recap, DACA is Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. It was a program for kids who were brought into the United States who had no legal authorization, but they came as children. And so the question, the policy question was, how do you treat them in the context of deportation or removal from the United States? Should there be a pathway for them to be legally here? President Obama had issued an executive order that essentially allowed them to remain in the United States on an interim basis until a final comprehensive solution can be developed. President Trump repealed that executive order and then put a gun to the head of Congress to come up with a bill, or in these kids would be subject to deportation.
Yeah, and a lot of them now are like fully functioning adults, right? They're teachers, right, and they're social workers. And so this is a humanitarian crisis as much as it is a kind of legal crisis. And so the Senate Republicans want to do something about it. The Senate Democrats want to do something about it. And we've got potentially a deal to be made here. Part of the thing on the table might be like beefed up border security provisions, limiting some chain migration, potentially a down payment on immigration laws that are trend towards a more merit-based system instead of a family-based system. We talked about this last week on the pod. So there are some things on the table that I think would be approachable and agreeable across the aisle. And I think the bottom line is that they've got to do something, right? I mean, this frankly could be the first big legislative win for Donald Trump, and it would come because of repealing of some of the Obama-era regulations.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is one where President Trump just flat-out beat the Democrats on. And it was a difficult situation. By repealing the executive order, which many people thought he wasn't going to do, essentially he's forced the Democrats in a position where they either risk losing the right that was granted, as you say, the humanitarian elements. Otherwise, you're going to see mass deportation in some cases. So it forces them to take a compromise on something they don't like to compromise on. Yeah. The border wall being the obvious one, the issue of a work versus family-based immigration system, reducing the overall level of immigration, all of which are really, really hard.
Yeah. It's also tough because Republicans may be on the hook to embrace things they might not want to, like the E-Verify system, which has been part of the discussion nationally. And there have been pushback from some conservative groups that say that this has to be in there, where some Republicans are really balking on that because it may be that it conflicts with their business interests or the interests of the business communities that they represent. So that's something I think it's still going to be a real sticking point that could be the one thing that undoes the deal.
Well, speaking of pushback from Republicans, Clinton, the DNC, Trump dossier, this is the stuff of spy novels. What happened here?
Yeah. So it turns out that the Clinton campaign and the DNC had helped to fund some of the now famous 35-page dossier containing allegations that President Trump essentially had strong connections to Russia and there were coordinations between the campaign and the Kremlin. A lot of these claims are very salacious. They include like outright bribery. We don't know to the degree to which these are true. People only have kind of whispers and rumors about really what's in it. But it is revealed that the Clinton and DNC, the Clinton campaign and the DNC were part of the funding for this, which the president had sort of long since suspected or had hinted at, and now has essentially like come true, at least giving him some partial win politically.
Yeah, it's like a John Le Carre spy novel here come to life, right? Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, you know, in this case, it was sort of a variation thereof. And speaking of this, sort of a similar kind of topic, conspiracy theorists out there, Oliver Stone, anyone interested? Guess what? The JFK assassination files are being released.
Wow.
What happened here, Brandon?
The document dump, 5 million pages, Jay. I know what I'm going to do this weekend. I'm going to sit through and wade through.
Oh, you know there will be people that are going to.
5 million documents, right. Yeah. Hey, fun fact, actually, my high school debate coach was close friends with Marina Oswald, who I've met on several occasions. Just to make it clear, they do know who assassinated President Kennedy, and it was not Lee Harvey Oswald. So,
what, interesting, was there any involvement by Ted Cruz's father?
I'm not able to say here, Jay, on the podcast, but I'll tell you later.
In all seriousness, though, I know the intelligence community has come out and said they are not in favor of this. There's some speculation that it's going to could potentially embarrass Mexico because Lee Harvey Oswald had taken a trip to Mexico just before. But, you know, it just, to me, just it's fuel. It's straight vintage Donald Trump. It's like Geraldo in that that Al Capone safe. He loves these kind of reality TV style kind of things. And this is his moment.
Yeah.
You know, it's probably much ado about nothing, but it is classic Donald Trump.
It also may give him the opportunity to embarrass the CIA and the FBI, which have been kind of frequent foils for him. So he could use this as an extraction of some measured revenge against these institutions. Well, speaking of presidents and former presidents, Jay, we have had actually a nice welcome change to the vitriolic politics that we're used to, and that is that we've had former presidents unite for a really good cause. What's happening?
Yeah, so we had the five former living U.S. presidents, President George H.W. Bush, President Jimmy Carter, President George W. Bush, President Bill Clinton, and of course, President Barack Obama, all come together on the campus of Texas A&M University to help support the victims of the myriad natural disasters we've had this year. There was some pageantry associated with it. It was a big moment. It's very rare that the five of them get together. We've seen lots of pictures recently of Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, and Barack Obama hanging out together, going to play golf together.
Right.
You know, we talk about this as sort of an elite little club, right? Yes. The most exclusive club in the world. These gentlemen hang out together. They spend time together, and we're seeing more of that. But the politics of it are interesting because just preceding this, Brandon, there were some surprising speeches made by Barack Obama and George W. Bush that were viewed as highly critical of President Trump, and something that you just normally don't see, and particularly from George W. Bush.
Yeah, in a bipartisan fashion too, which I think was really telling. Now, he said he wasn't talking specifically about Donald Trump, but I think it's clear that the spirit of what he was talking about relate to the politics that are surrounding Trump. But I like the idea of these presidents uniting. It's like the Backstreet Boys getting back together, right? Or Justin Timberlake, right? Rejoining.
Exactly.
NSYNC,
right?
This is a big part of
boy bands, right? The boy bands are back.
It is a very boy band until we have a female president. And so it's going to be mostly boy bands. But this is interesting because, you know, most former presidents are non-political or apolitical. They come together to solve these kinds of big problems. So I like the idea that this is something that we as a country can unify behind. And I think the hope is that, you know, they get together and write a book, or maybe they solve crimes together and do a podcast or something like that. Like, I would totally listen to that, right?
Oh, yeah. Presidential podcast would be huge.
Perfect, right? Perfect.
Huge ratings, I'm sure. It actually would be a lot of fun to hear them talk. Well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to talk about sort of the big issue of the week. Pretty much been the issue of the week for a while now. And this is, what is the future of the Republican Party in the United States of America?
So, Jay, the big news of the week is the ongoing friction within the Republican Party. A couple questions for you. Number one, is the Republican Party disintegrating or is it reorganizing? And the second question is this now Trump's Republican Party so that it is a different Republican Party than we saw, say, of George W. Bush, who we talked about a minute ago, or George H.W. Bush, who left office even before that?
The simple answer is yes, it's a different Republican Party now. This is not unlike that similar realignment that you had in the Republican Party in 1980, when Ronald Reagan was elected. Essentially, over a period of time, it shifted the base center of the Republican Party to a more conservative side. It's not unlike what happened in the 1820s when Andrew Jackson became president of the United States. The Democratic Party fundamentally shifted its direction, became much more sort of populist in the way in its outlook. It's a really different party. The reason Corker and Flake are not running again, simply put, is they are no longer in the mainstream of the primary electorate.
Yeah, which is crazy because Jeff Flake is a pretty conservative member of the caucus, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's got a 90%+ of the time he votes with Trump. This is a temperament stylistic issue. It's rhetorical in some ways, right? Because there's a populism versus sort of a pragmatism approach. Mm-hmm. This is a different kind of Republican Party. But think about it, right? Fundamental shifts on immigration, fundamental shifts on trade. The Republican Party was a free trade party for almost all of its time. Whether you want to characterize it as this way or not, it was a Wall Street first party. Yeah. It's not none of those things now.
Yeah. It's interesting you bring up Ronald Reagan, because there was concern when Reagan was elected that Republicans would not be able to work with him, that he would be too extreme. His whole candidacy was based on this idea of being a kind of, you know, Barry Goldwater style conservative. He came in and was able to really unify the party around a couple of core principles and was able to legislate effectively. I think Donald Trump could be that president if he could organize the White House effectively, if he could keep on message, and if he frankly would stop calling out Bob Corker, right? Or little Bob Corker, if you will. So to me, this is something that the Republican Party can steer into and can save themselves. But it does require leadership from the top. On top of this sort of fracas that we see with specific members, we also see several members of the legislature like leaving, right? We usually have on average about 22 people who retire from Congress in an average year. Well, we have 28 currently, Jay, and counting. We also have 1/4 of all of the women in the Republican caucus not running for re-election. So there is a tremendous amount of ambiguity and I think dissatisfaction with Donald Trump that is really pushing these Republicans out the door. The question is, whom will they get to replace as Republicans? And can Trump govern with people who are ambivalent about how he runs his White House?
Right. I mean, because I think the real question is Donald Trump sort of a Republican version of Jimmy Carter? Mm-hmm. Is he kind of a one-term guy that was at war with his own party and then subsequently loses? Or is he this Reagan-like figure that the party essentially shifts in a direction more towards him? The difference, I think, with Reagan and Trump, obviously, is Ronald Reagan was a deeply charming and affable person. Mm-hmm. He had close Democratic friends. He worked very well with Speaker Tip O'Neill. He had a power of personality that was able to lift people up and bring people together. Donald Trump has simply not proven that he has that, right? I think by just fundamental disposition, he's far more naturally inclined to be in conflict with others. And so I think it becomes problematic to see him in that fashion. I tend to think he's going to be a lot more like Carter in terms of sort of alienating folks.
Yeah.
But the difference is the Republican primary electorate seems to have fundamentally shifted in a direction towards Donald Trump. Yeah. And I think that's the difference. They're rewarding mean. They're not rewarding nice.
Yeah.
Right? This is like Mean Girls, right?
Right.
They're rewarding the bad girls.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, I think you definitely see that shift. And most Republicans are really running scared because they know that they can't run with Trump. And they don't want to run against Trump, so they've chosen just to kind of not run. And that retirement process is really going to hurt the Republican caucus's ability to be able to govern, right? You have people who don't want to work with Trump, and as a result, they're just going to drop out of that process. So a lot of these independent-minded conservatives are simply no longer going to be part of that process. And the fact is now, at least in the interim, these are people who are important players, and they're not going to be gone until the next election. So you've got a full year until effectively they're not going to be around. What's going to happen to the president's agenda during that time?
Right. I mean, that's the whole question, right? I mean, we talked about the fact that Flake is leaving and Corker is leaving and that they, in terms of personality, don't like the president. But what does that mean and how does that translate to things like immigration reform? How does it deal with taxes? Do they adopt what Trump wants or do they say, you know what, let's just not do anything? So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to tell you why all of this sort of upheaval in the Republican Party is so important to you.
So, Jay, this warfare within the Republican Party continues, like we've talked about. The president suggested that Bob Corker couldn't get elected dog catcher in Tennessee. I don't even know if they elect dog catchers in Tennessee, but I do know that we have a real perception problem that the Republicans can't govern, and maybe they've been given what they asked for, which is the chance to govern, and perhaps they're just not able to do it.
Yeah, the dog caught the car,
yeah.
And now doesn't know how to drive the car.
Yeah.
So it's sort of one of those weird situations. I'm not sure that this is a functional situation, largely because Donald Trump is not a classic Republican. The issue, I think, is he's redefined the party base. And because our system is so primary dominated right now, you've got huge swaths of disaffected voters who don't want to participate in primary elections sort of being left out. So as both parties' primary systems tend to be increasingly dominated by these ideological extremes, you're going to continue to have more and more of a problem.
Well, the question for me is, will the Republican Party gravitate towards a Trumpian brand of governing? I think that's hard to say at this point, because looking at some of the data, we don't see a lot of the members of Congress or in the state legislature endorsing Trump in the campaign. So I don't think that that brand of conservatism, that brand of Republicanism is necessarily going to apply more broadly. So we will see the degree to which there's going to be a real shift. But it's clear that Republicans are unsure about what their electorate will look like. And that's something that will have a tremendous effect on how the 2018 election will go, which will dictate much of what the president does in his second part of his first term.
Well, that's a wrap for this week. Remember, we also do a weekly Texas Politics episode, which you can also download on iTunes too, or wherever you get your podcasts. As always, thanks to Houston Public Media, our spectacular producer, Edel Hallin, and thanks to our engineer extraordinaire, Big Audio, Todd Hulslander.
Hey, leave us a review on iTunes, because it'll help other folks find the podcast. Or hey, tell a friend. It'll be just as easy. Got any questions? Shoot us a tweet with the hashtag PartyPoliticsPod, or email us at PartyPoliticsPod@HoustonPublicMedia.org.
I'm Jay Iyer.
And I'm Brandon Rottinghouse. We'll see you next week.